welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada, and on this program, we're going to strive to expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, I'm going to explain the motivations behind the headlines and also try to forecast what these events portend for our future. Then during our second hour, we're going to return to Yah's Torah teaching and attempt to replace religion with reason. Our phone number for those who would like to engage in this discussion is 877-300-7645. In fact, just to speak about those who would call the show, we will begin the second hour of today's program by answering a question of a caller very late in the second hour of yesterday's show. The question was, in essence, if the Torah is still in full force, why even bother with a Masayah? Why did Yahusha arrive, come? What purpose did he serve if the Torah, as originally written, was still in full force? And so we're going to answer that question at the beginning of the second hour. The election in America is nearing the finish line. The two worst ads as we have approached the end of this horrible electoral season has been the one put out by the Obama administration that speaks about individuals having earned their Social Security and Medicare benefits, which is untrue, and has the recipient of Social Security telling Mitt Romney to keep his hands off of that person's money. Social Security and Medicare are both Ponzi schemes. The benefits are not earned. The money that has been confiscated previously has already been squandered. And so there is no money to have someone take their hands off of. It is a complete lie, but it is that lie of dependence, of justification that perpetrates Ponzi schemes. The second worst ad, I think, of the season is just inundating the airwaves. It is the Colin Powell ad on endorsing Barack Obama. The last time, of course, we saw Colin Powell endorse something, he was endorsing the justification to invade Iraq. That left 1 million people dead. It squandered the lives of some 7,000 American sons and daughters. It squandered some $4 trillion of American treasure. It made a very bad situation in Iraq infinitely worse, and has led to the world as we know it now, with Iran not only on the cusp of a nuclear bomb, but the Islamic reformations and the proxy wars now between Sunni and Shia Islam, as we're seeing in Syria. It was a disaster. And this man has the audacity to now say, well, I want to endorse another political agenda. And the President of the United States is so misguided that he thinks that this man's endorsement is a good thing. He speaks of the president bringing stability to the economy. Mind you, he doesn't say he brought jobs or brought recovery, because he did neither. Unemployment has actually increased under his tenure, and there has been no recovery from Great Recession. He talked about housing recovering. That's not true. Housing is still languishing. It's languishing mostly because of the malfeasance associated with the lending industry. It was government regulations and involvement over lenders that caused the recession in the first place. It wasn't caused by Wall Streeters, as the Democratic Party would have you believe. It was caused by government interference in the housing market vis-a-vis loans, making too much money too easily available to people who could not afford it at unrealistically low rates, which would obviously increase, causing the very calamity that we witnessed. And because now there is uncertainty in the lending markets, where the government has said there will be sharp fines on bankers that approve unsupportable loans, and yet without any conditions as to what would qualify as an unsupportable loan. The majority of people who want to buy houses are disqualified from buying them because they can't get loans. He said he saved the automotive industry. That's also not true. He gave Chrysler to Fiat for nothing so that Fiat could use its dealerships to sell Fiat 500s. And he gave General Motors to the unions, which were the organization most responsible for bankrupting the company in the first place. As for the one auto company he didn't touch, it's by far the healthiest board. And he said that he's done a very, very good job on the war on terrorism. There is no war on terrorism. It is a myth. And as such, doing a very good job to squander blood and coin on a myth is hardly a positive consideration. And the only thing the man has done that really is of his doing is that he decided that he would try his own surge in Afghanistan. And it failed miserably. In a year and a half under the surge, as many Americans died as had died in the 10 years prior to his surge. And Afghanistan has never been in a more vulnerable position. So it failed in every possible way. And yet Colin Powell endorses him. I decided this morning that I would share with you my lesser of two evils evaluation of these two men. This is highly subjective. It's not an objective evaluation. But since many people think that it is their patriotic duty to vote for the lesser of two evils, I've got a scorecard here for you to consider. As for me, I don't buy into that. I think that if you thought that George Bush, for example, was the lesser of two evils against Al Gore, then the blood of a million souls who were killed by his foolish invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan is on your hands. If you voted for him as the lesser of two evils, then the fact that America turned a surplus into a $1.4 trillion deficit under his tenure is also a stain on your character. And so I would be very careful about that. If you voted for Obama during the first term because you thought he was going to bring change, which is what he proved, and yet he put in more retreads of prior administrations than any administration in history, and all he did is accelerate the same problems that were destroying America, didn't change direction on any of them, then you have to live with that. Here are the criterion. Religion. Barack Obama endorses Islam. He lies on behalf of Islam. He advocates on behalf of Islam. He spent much of his youth listening to the rhetoric of an anti-Semitic Christian pastor in Reverend Wright. He is a socialist secular humanist. On a 1 to 10 scale, both positive and negative, with a plus 10 being someone who would bring profound improvement, and minus 10 of one who would bring a profound detriment, or who would be a profound detriment to the country, I have Barack Obama as a minus 10 on religion. Mitt Romney will, by becoming president as a fundamentalist Mormon, will bring credibility to Mormonism. I would give him a minus 6, because while Mormonism is as foolish as is Islam as a religion, as unreliable and as untrue, the difference between the two is that Islam is deadly. And Mormonism is only deadly at the end of your mortal existence, while Islam is deadly to those who are alive. So minus 9 versus minus 6. On the political front, Barack Obama presents himself as the source of hope and as the leader to move us forward. He is both extraordinarily partisan. He is a condescender. He is a consistent liar. I would give him a minus 8. On the plus 10 to minus 10 scale. Mitt Romney's campaign has presented America as something to believe in. He is a compromising negotiator, which I see as amongst the worst things you can possibly be. And he wants to reshape America into the form of Massachusetts, which is amongst the most liberal states in the country. On the political scale, I would give Barack Obama a -8, as I would Mitt Romney. On economics, there is a difference here. Barack Obama has absolutely no qualifications to manage the nation's economy. He hasn't even worked for a business, much less run one. He is in favor of wealth redistribution. That is his primary focus. He is a debt machine. He is increasing American dependence, and he has stifled energy production. It is hard to imagine anybody less desirable economically than Barack Hussein Obama. I'd give him a -20 if my scale allowed it, but I'll put him as a -10. Mitt Romney has investor qualifications. I would much rather see an actual entrepreneur as the president of the United States rather than an investor. But he at least understands what causes businesses to succeed and fail, as opposed to a manager who has caused businesses to succeed. But that's a positive, that at least he has investor qualifications. He is a free enterprise advocate. He has a productivity focus as opposed to a wealth redistribution focus. I think that it is likely that he will increase energy production where his contender stifled it. But while those things are mostly positive, he has an unrealistic approach to spending. Wants to maintain Social Security and Medicare while he increases military spending. And so the unrealistic spending, at very best, neutralizes all of the positives economically. I'd give him a 0. But that's compared to a -10 for the incumbent. On the military, Barack Obama is completely wrong in all of his rhetoric and agenda in his war against terrorism and extremism. Now, on a positive side, he did get the U.S. out of Iraq. On the negative side, he dug the U.S. in deeper in Afghanistan. He is grossly overusing drones. He was wrong, and on the wrong side in Egypt, Libya, and Syria. And as a positive, he does want to cut military spending. Give him a -8, but we'll return to Mitt Romney after the break.
Ladies.
Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We were taking a trip down through the election to decide whether or not Barack Obama or Mitt Romney represents election cycle's version of the lesser of two evils. We have to review Mitt Romney's position on the U.S. Military, and then the final category will be personal integrity, good judgment, and leadership qualities to determine who, at least in this very subjective poll, is the lesser of two evils. And as I've shared, Barack Obama is a mixed bag on the military side. He is completely wrong on the war against terrorism / extremism. His statements attesting the murder of America's ambassador to the film as opposed to Ansar Sharia, which is a fundamentalist Islamic group, is evidence of that. The fact that after finally allowing Americans to go in and hunt down Osama bin Laden, which I saw it as a complete waste of time because he was not engaged in doing anything and he wasn't the man responsible for 9/11 anyway. But, he said at that time that America has never been and will never be at war with Islam, instead was at war with Al-Qaeda. That kind of dishonesty is deadly in today's time. He did get the U.S. out of Iraq, but he dug us deeper into Afghanistan. He is grossly overusing drones to murder people. And he was not just on the wrong side in Egypt, Libya, Syria, but he actually aided and abetted fundamentalist Muslims taking those countries over from previously secular governments. But he does want to cut military spending, which is a positive. So I'd give him a minus 8 on a plus 10 to minus 10 scale. Mitt Romney, however, is also wrong on the war against terrorism. He can't say that it's a war against Islam. He will on occasion say it's Islamic extremism, which is slightly better than the president. He, though, would be much more aggressive in arming the Mujahideen, the Islamic terrorists in Syria, which would be devastating to America and to the world as a whole. It would lead directly to World War III. He would continue to murder with drones. He would make that very clear in the final debate. And he wants to substantially increase military spending. And so on the military, I'd give him a minus 10. That leads us to the final subjective category, personal integrity, good judgment, and leadership qualities. I give Barack Obama, who I think is the personification of evil, if you wanted a prototype for the Antichrist on Earth today, even though he is not the Antichrist because he's premature, he is the leader of a large country, and he did not come from the intersection of the Alexander the Great's conquests and the Roman Empire. Therefore, he is not the Antichrist, but he is certainly a prototype for the Antichrist. And therefore, I would give him a minus 9. As for Mitt Romney, I would give him a minus 8. He has a tendency to speak out of both sides of his mouth. No Mormon can be accused of exercising good judgment, and his leadership qualities are all in the areas of compromise, which I think is a disastrous strategy. So I give him a minus 8. If you total them up, Barack Obama on a plus 10 to minus 10 scale on six categories comes in at a soaring minus 44, and Mitt Romney at a minus 32. The only difference really between the two fellows is in the economic area, socialism versus free enterprise, and it really is that clear. Barack Obama's last State of the Union address, he talked about how he wanted to run the U.S. economy the same way that the U.S. military was run, and from each according to their ability, to each according to their need. It was pure communism, so to say that he advocates wealth redistribution and socialism is not a stretch. And Romney is clearly free enterprise. Unfortunately, he's also a big spender. And so there is a difference on the productivity side. There is no difference on the spending side. And then on the religion issue, you've got the advocacy of Islam versus the advocacy of Mormonism. I would take the advocacy of Mormonism over the advocacy of Islam because Islam is so destructive and so deadly. But my advice in this, for what it's worth, is not to endorse the lesser of two evils. You don't want to be associated with the legacy of either of these two men. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
My name is...
Welcome back to Shattering Myths. As we pursue the news across the various media outlets, one of the things that comes to our attention and that is that workers in Greece, this is using workers in quotes, of course, in Greece have launched a 48-hour general strike. In other words, workers aren't working across the public and private sectors in protest at a proposed new wave of austerity. You know, it was socialist schemes that got Greece to this point. They were all in favor of wealth redistribution. They were essentially controlled by unions, and it is the unions that collectively negotiated themselves to the position that they bankrupt the country, just as unions bankrupt the automakers in the United States. Yes, Scott?
I was just going to say that there's people that I talk to, they don't understand what wealth redistribution is. Could you give a quick, like, what that is exactly?
Yeah, that's the basis of socialism and communism is from each according to their ability, to each according to their need. So what you do in a communist or socialist economic scheme is you redistribute income and wealth from those who are capable of producing it to those who were not. And so what you end up with is what we have in America. You have 50% receiving income from the government and paying nothing to the government, and 50% of the nation generating productive income and paying the government and having their income redistributed to people who did not earn it. And so wealth redistribution is the Robin Hood strategy. You take from those who have money and you give it to those who have less money. And so rather than the free enterprise strategy, which is to increase productivity so that the economy as a whole grows and everybody that chooses to participate in it benefits from it. In wealth redistribution, you take the what exists, and rather than producing more income and more wealth, you simply redistribute that which already exists. But the problem with that is that every time that you do that, you take the incentive out for people to invest their energy and their monies to produce and to grow, because you're penalizing and punishing success, and you increase those who are dependent because you're rewarding failure. And so every time that strategy is tried in a socialistic or communist country, it fails. It brings everyone down as opposed to lifting anyone up. It is the strategy that was deployed in Ernst and Greece. They have been socialistic for a very long time, and now the people in Greece think that they're entitled to these various benefits that they are unwilling to pay for, and they have pushed the burden on to their children to the point now where their aggregate debt is over 150% of their gross domestic product, which means they are bankrupt. But so is America. America's national debt now exceeds its gross national product. And so America also is bankrupt for exactly the same reason. A company is bankrupt when they consistently spend more money than they take in. When rather than producing profits, they produce losses. And if you do that over and over again, you reach a point where the losses mount up and the debt becomes unserviceable, at which point a company is bankrupt. America has done that year after year to the point that it is now bankrupt. Anyway, turning to Greece, protesters have begun to march to the parliament. Previous rallies have often turned ugly with riots ensuing and battles with police. The police in this particular case are defending the parliament, which is due to vote on a package of salary and pension cuts and labor market reforms on Wednesday. The way that unions, particularly in a socialistic climate, negotiate is that they realize that they can ask for pensions and benefits, like medical health care benefits, to go into perpetuity so that the existing politician is not burdened with the immediate cost of what they have done, but that future generations are destroyed by the cost, the burden of what has been accepted. And that's what's happened in Greece. And they also make it such that if you are an unproductive worker versus a productive worker, the unproductive worker cannot be fired. And so it tends to create an environment where people are no longer hardworking. They no longer, they realize they can't be let go, and so they're no longer willing to make the sacrifices that are necessary to prosper. Hi again, Scott.
This reminds me of that the college professor that told his kids that everybody had an A, and after the first test, you know, he just told everybody that they all have an A. After giving their first test, and the kids that studied for it and actually got A's,
yeah,
they just stopped doing it. And the ones,
of course,
that, yeah. So basically, that's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, no one is productive anymore. No one is making an investment of their energies or resources to grow, to become better, is what happens in in this kind of mindset. Now, this latest Greek strike is to keep the parliament from agreeing to these cuts, which have to be made to continue to fund Greek's debt, which is being funded by countries outside of Greece, and for them to avoid bankruptcy. The latest strike was called by Greek's two largest labor unions, representing half of the workforce. And so if you want to know why Greece is in such a mess, all you have to do is that recognize that labor unions represent half, just two labor unions, just two, represent half of the workforce. And their remedy to the rampant unemployment in Greece and the lack of productivity in Greece is not to go to work. Trains, ferries, international flights were all being canceled, schools were being closed, and hospitals were only open for emergencies. Yep, that's the way to solve that problem. There is a news story out of the UK that is deeply troubling. It tells us that sexual abuse runs far deeper than just Roman Catholicism. This is the story. It says the Prime Minister of the UK is appointing a senior independent figure to look into the allegations of sexual abuse at North Wales children's homes in the 1970s and the 1980s, and also to investigate how they were dealt with in the 1990s. Victim Steve Misham has said that the Waterhouse inquiry of 2,000 sexual abuse cases only covered a fraction of the alleged assaults. Child abuse is an absolutely hateful and abhorrent crime, Mr. Cameron said. He's the Prime Minister of Great Britain, speaking in, of all places, Abu Dhabi. The Prime Minister added that these allegations are truly dreadful and they must be not be left hanging in the air, so I'm taking action today. Now, of course, he's speaking from an Islamic country. In Islam, the ruling authorities are so repulsive, they confiscate young boys to have sex with them, and they rape not only young girls, they prostitute their wives, and in an Islamic country, when the young boy is gang raped by the authorities, or the woman is sold into prostitution and raped, rather than the pimp, the husband, or the government person being held accountable, it is the woman and the child who are convicted of crimes. And that speaks volumes about Cameron addressing this issue from Abu Dhabi. A three-year inquiry into the abuse centered around a Bryn Estyn children's home in North Wales was first published in the year 2000 by Sir Ronald Waterhorse. Among the other claims made by one of the many hundreds, if not thousands, who claim they were sexually abused during the period, is that the abused, were abused by Thatcher-era conservative politicians. And in this case, it is the is those who would promote themselves as being values-oriented and conservative that were promoting and participating in the abuse. In the early 1990s, allegations of the abuse in almost 40 children's homes in Wales started to surface in March of 1994, when an independent inquiry into the claims of widespread abuse Wales first came to light. But the inquiry's report was never published, and the copies were pulped to ensure the local authority was able to maintain its insurance cover. So, exactly like the Roman Catholic Church, the administrators, government administrators, perpetrated the acts of pedophilia and sexual abuse, and the those above them did nothing to stop them. And when an inquiry was conducted to find the accountable parties, those in power simply destroyed the evidence, covered it up. Exactly the same as the Roman Catholic Church. And should you, you know, be smug and say, well, that would never happen in the United States, well, understand that, that the vast majority of women who participate in the U.S. military are sexually abused. They are many, many times more likely to be sexually abused while serving in the U.S. military than any other place on earth. Reuters. A suicide bomber rammed his explosive-filled car into a group of soldiers and trainees outside an army base in Baghdad, Iraq, killing 31 people and injuring tens, if not scores, more in one of the worst attacks this year on the country's military. It was not among the worst attacks this year of terrorism, however. The bombings and attacks, this is the editorial comment of Reuters, have eased sharply since the height of Iran's sectarian strife in 2006 and 2007. But Al-Qaeda's local affiliates and other Sunni Islamist insurgents often target security forces to stoke tensions, the Reuters apologist opines. Be back to this story in a moment. To the final news segment of Shattering Myths for today. We were just considering a news story where a suicide bomber detonated himself on behalf of his god Allah, killing at least 31 people and maiming scores of others. It reminds me of a story that was sent to me by one of my favorite people this morning, where the Haqqani Network, you probably heard a lot about them, and the international debate, Mitt Romney loved to speak of the Haqqani Network, which is a rival Islamic group to the Taliban, their same agenda, but different people at the helm. Well, the Haqqani Network has a chief of suicide operations. It's a lovely title, isn't it? And the United States has just listed him on the It's Okay to Kill list, recognizing that the chief of suicide operations probably isn't up to any good. But looking at this apology from Reuters, it's deeply troubling. The first thing after talking about the suicide bomber in one of the worst attacks on the country's military, that's misleading, because killing 31 people is a is not a one of the larger attacks that have been launched by Sunnis against Shia this year in Iraq. And so the fact that this one was against the military as opposed to against civilians is the only thing that makes it somewhat unique and can be considered larger only in that context. So it's misleading. Then he goes on to say that the bombings have eased sharply since Iraq's sectarian strife in 2006 and 2007. Well, that is true, that the number of Sunni and Shia terrorist attacks in 2006 and 2007 is greater than the number in 2012. But what that also does is take this out of context. What you should be comparing is the number of suicide killings and suicide attacks perpetrated under the religion of Islam, therefore sectarian, now versus before America invaded Iraq. That would be the more interesting comparison. And I did that. I spent 6 months documenting what happened in Iraq prior to the U.S. invasion versus after the U.S. invasion. And what we find now is that the number of suicide attacks are up so sharply, you can't even measure them in percentile. You're not talking about there's a 50% increase or a 75% increase or a 100% increase or even a 200 or 300 or 400% increase. You're dealing with increases on the magnitude of 50 times greater than they were before America invaded Iraq. In other words, America is responsible for making a very bad situation worse. The next aspect of this is it's basing it on Al-Qaeda's local affiliate. What we found when we raided and then killed Osama bin Laden's in his compound was that that he had absolutely no affinity with Al-Qaeda in Iraq or Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula or Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb in Northern Africa. None. He was writing to them, and they were not responding to him. He was criticizing them and condemning them. He, rather than endorsing them, was opposed to them. And so there is no association between Al-Qaeda in Iraq and Al-Qaeda as we went after it in Pakistan with the killing of Osama bin Laden. None. Moreover, Al-Qaeda isn't the reason for the terror. This is strictly Sunni Islamic terrorists trying to usurp their will against Shia Islamic terrorists. It's the same war taking place inside of Iraq that we see manifesting itself in Syria and has nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. You know, the reality is, again, the perspective and context are important. Al-Qaeda did not exist in Iraq prior to the U.S. invasion. Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein, were archenemies. They were not allies, as the prior president of the United States alleged. And when we don't understand these things, we have this tendency to believe that we can be at war against Al-Qaeda. And the Shiite Muslims there in Al-Qaeda, who are the victims of these attacks, are themselves causing the tensions because they have been monolithic. They have imposed their will through the ballot box against both the Kurds and the Sunnis. It is what happens when you empower one Islamic group over the other. We're going to return to Shattering Myths after the break. I am your host, Yana.
Ben here, nutritional pharmacist and skincare chemist. If you've heard me on my daily health and wellness program, The Bright Side, you know I'm on a mission to spread the good news about the power of nutrition.